From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later this hour, miraculous moments followed by those open lines. Couple notes for you. First of all, happy birthday to Coast listener Charlena from your guy, Reg. He actually sent me an email a few days ago and said, George, could you do this for me? Absolutely. So happy birthday, Charlena. And happy anniversary, number 5, to the NighthawkZone.com, folks. Thank you for all your support of Coast to Coast AM, and have a great bash over there tonight. Here's what's happening. BP said that it could seal its ruptured Gulf of Mexico oil well by next week as the House of Representatives voted to toughen regulation of offshore energy drilling. Incoming BP chief executive Bob Dudley said the British energy giant would attempt a static kill operation on Tuesday to try to plug the blown-out deep-sea well that has caused the worst offshore spill in the U.S. history. Now, this marks a slight delay. The U.S. official overseeing the spill response, retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, had said that he hoped the operation to pump mud and cement into the well could be performed as early as this weekend. Not going to happen. The economic recovery lost momentum in the spring as growth slowed to a 2.4% pace, its most sluggish showing in nearly a year, and too weak to drive down unemployment. Consumers spent less, companies slowed their restocking of shelves, and the nation's trade deficit dragged more on the economy in the April to June quarter. In a separate report, the Commerce Department said the recession was deeper than previously estimated. Two billionaire brothers face federal fraud charges for selling stock in companies which they helped oversee and then trying to conceal some $550 million in gains. And a complaint issued late Thursday, the Securities and Exchange Commission said that Sam and Charles Wiley Jr. attempted to hide their ownership and trading of stock in these firms by creating an elaborate system of offshore trusts and subsidiary companies. Ordinary calcium supplements taken by the elderly to strengthen bones may boost the risk of heart attacks, according to a study. The findings published in the British Medical Journal suggest that the role of calcium in the treatment of osteosclerosis should be reconsidered. Calcium tablets are commonly prescribed to boost skeletal health, but a recent clinical trial has suggested they might increase the number of heart attacks and other cardiovascular problems in healthy older women. Kristen Wild is author and researcher and continues to monitor these breaking medical stories for us. So does this mean don't take calcium supplements, Christian?
No, George, I think, and first of all, good evening to you. I would say moderation and discuss it with your physician. I certainly wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. This kind of information scares a lot of women that are listening tonight, but it is just one study. A lot of times they'll look and make a meta-analysis of many other studies that they didn't have to pay for, and then they'll draw certain conclusions from all the various studies. But they didn't even give us a definitive reason for their findings. They talk about an increased risk of heart attack, and it leaves one to speculate because they didn't tell us. Is it something to do with coronary calcification? Because there's such a broad body of evidence that when calcification occurs, it can be caused by calcium that has leached from the bones in the skeleton and found residency in the soft tissue of the coronary arteries. Is that what they're talking about? After reading the article, George,
they don't make that known.
No, they don't make that known. They give us very little, so I'm speculating. After reading the article, I thought about what you and I talked about last November about vitamin D. And I couldn't help but think of that study, and I wondered if they monitored the patients in the study that was released today for their vitamin D levels, and here's why. To be protective, nutritionalists and doctors know that calcium, to be absorbed into the bloodstream, they need a balance of vitamin D and calcium. Now, multiple vitamin D studies have noted the very same cardiovascular and shorter longevity risk factors that were the main points in today's study that was released. that when vitamin D levels were deficient, there was a 2-time increase in heart attacks. And among the elderly, among those who had lower levels of vitamin D, there was a shortening of longevity. However, among the patients who had normal levels of vitamin D, they didn't have the heart attack risk, number one. Number two, they actually added 5 years longevity to their lifespan. So look at this in conjunction with many other studies and talk to your physician. And one day, George, you and I have to talk about something called vitamin K2. It's a miraculous finding, and it's going to revolutionize a lot of areas in medicine.
Now, Christian, what's new with myheartbook.com, your website, and your newsletter?
We're working hard. We're enjoying it. And we need more of you to sign up for the newsletter. I didn't give you the phone number the last time, but it's 866-STEM, STEM 123.
You got it. Thanks. Christian Wild monitoring these health stories for us. The number of cell phones shipped worldwide rose 14.5% in the second quarter compared with a year earlier, with much of the growth coming from smaller challengers like the iPhone and BlackBerry. Researchers have identified rocks that they say could contain the fossilized remains of life on early Mars. Their work has revealed a trench on Mars that they say is a dead ringer for a region in Australia where some of the earliest evidence of life on Earth has been buried and preserved in mineral form. The report, the findings in the journal Earth and Planetary Science Letters, and also a new image just released by NASA confirms that the space agency has long said that there is no face on Mars. It's just a rocky mesa. In 1976, the NASA Viking spacecraft first captured the stunning picture of the area, showing what clearly looked like a face on the surface of Mars. But where did it go? Some then have described the image as clear proof that both Martians existed and that NASA and the government were aware of their existence. The new image comes from the high-resolution imaging science experiment camera on board the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, a multipurpose satellite designed to explore the red planet from orbit. In 2007, the camera captured the picture of the eroded mesa, made famous by its similarity to a human face. NASA finally released the image just a few days ago. But what is it? Ah, science advisor and head of the enterprisemission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. What a night tonight. Open lines. We're going to talk about miraculous moments. And we've got, of course, Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, head of the enterprisemission.com. Richard, first of all, I hope you have a great weekend ahead. You and Robin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George.
Now, first of all, I've got to get your reaction to this NASA-released image of the old face on Mars, something that got me interested in you a long time ago when I was watching cable television and Up You Pop talking about monuments, heard you on Coast to Coast. I was mesmerized ever since. I still am. I saw the pictures from the Viking that you released to us, saw it on the Art Bell website at the time. Then they went and took another image years later, and they disappointed us, and now they've disappointed me big time. What's going on?
Well, it's a lie. It's a total, flat, absolute lie, and it's an obvious indication that someone at NASA is getting increasingly desperate, that we're probably on the verge, on the eve of the D-word, disclosure. But it looks like, politically, it's not going to come from our side. It's not going to come from NASA. It's probably going to come from the Europeans. Remember, I've been saying, because of this extraordinary Phobos data that the European Space Agency released to us this spring, that they're going to have this big meeting in Rome in late September, and then another meeting in Moscow in November, because the Russians are sending an unmanned probe to go to Phobos, which is the inner moon of Mars. It's artificial. It's a, 8-15 mile wide spaceship from our analysis. And we have inside sources that are indicating that they may be releasing data, leaking data in the next few days, let alone at this meeting, which could not only confirm the idea of intelligence in orbit around Mars, ancient intelligence, but the obvious inference then is that there had to be somebody down on the surface that was masterminding everything that we're seeing in orbit. Well, that's where this new NASA release comes in. First lie, it's not a new picture. It's a picture that was taken in 2007 by the high-rise camera on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. Second, the face doesn't disappear. What NASA's very cleverly done is to zoom in to the center of that previously released picture, three-year-old picture, so that you're getting an ultra-close-up, kind of like if you were to zoom in really tight on the upper lip of the Mona Lisa.
And you'd have no idea what it was.
Yeah. And what they're doing is they're comparing on the Fox story, which you sent me, which came from the Daily Mail story in London, which people have been sending me for the last couple of days. I mean, this is a very well-orchestrated disinformation campaign, so blatant, so obvious, so easily provable, that you have to say, what are these people smoking? The idea is they're obviously desperate, and this is a prophylactic. This is to try to get most people to move along, nothing here to see, nothing of interest, move along, folks, because something big is coming, and I think it's from the Europeans. And obviously, if it is, and we get the leaked data that we're thinking we might get in the next few days, you guys listening to us tonight will be the first to know.
Perfect. Yet they're leading us into another story, Richard, which you've been talking about for years, saying that they've identified rocks that could contain fossilized remains of life on early Mars. What's that all about?
Well, remember, if you cannot go to intelligent life or ruins, evidence of ancient intelligent life, but you know there's a lot of people that would like to fund, you know, looking for life and finding some kind of life somewhere in the solar system, what's your fallback position? As I said many years ago on Fox in 1996, you go to microbes, because microbes don't hold ray guns and they don't shoot back.
Yeah, that's right. They're innocent, aren't they?
They're safe. And what's even safer is dead microbes, several billion-year-old dead microbes. I mean, that's what this story is about. What they've done with the CRISM spectrometer on MRO, on Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, the same spacecraft which took the photograph of Cydonia, they're trying to palm off as a new picture, and it was actually taken 3 years ago. I mean, this is just nuts.
Why'd they sit on it? By the way, why'd they sit on it for 3 years?
Well, they didn't. They released it 3 years ago. We've analyzed it. It's in Dark Mission. Mike and I put this in Dark Mission. I focused
that,
in.
That same one. Okay.
The same picture, except, of course, we had black and white images. What they've done is they've released this little narrow color strip in the center of the very large high-rise image, and they zoomed in, again, like looking at the upper lip of the Mona Lisa. So, of course, all you're going to see are brush strokes. You know, you got to stand back. It's what I call the Gigi effect, which goes back to a Marie Chevalier film, and we don't have to go into that.
That's not
anyway, back to the fossil life story. There is a plain of rocks in Australia made of calcium carbonate, limestone, which is the remains of little guys called stromatolites, which are the earliest fossilized evidence, big time evidence of ancient life on Earth. Billions of years old, about 3.5 to 4 billion years old. What this CRISM spectrometer on the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter spacecraft circling Mars has now seen are rocks that are essentially identical to these ancient rocks on Earth that we know hold fossilized remnants of the earliest life on this planet, little microorganisms in colonies called mats, stromatolite mats. And so someone in NASA, it's kind of like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, or it's the safe way to get pregnant with life on Mars, but you don't want to go to guys that might hold ray guns, so you go to ancient, dead, very, very, very dead little guys that are fossilized and safely dead by billions and billions of years.
Richard, in the 5 minutes I've got left here with you, I want to get your reaction to what's been going on with this BP oil leak. Hopefully by this weekend, they claim they're going to finally stop it. Who knows? They're going to shoot for putting in mud and stuff like that, probably a few days into Sunday, Monday, into Tuesday. They wanted to finish it by this weekend. It's not going to happen. Where do we stand on all
that? Well, if I was a betting man, I would not take money that BP is going to end this nightmare anytime soon. Let me tell you what happened over the last few hours.
All right.
The Admiral Thad Allen, announced very quietly, very low-key, underplaying it, that the relief well that they're drilling down, 18, 20,000 feet.
This is the first one, one of two.
One of two, which was poised just to intercept. They were going to try to intercept this weekend and start the bottom kill procedure. Well, the last 40 feet, apparently, when they put the plug in, when they had to all leave, take all the ships away because of the storm Bonnie, when they came back, they found the last 40 feet had collapsed.
Oh, no.
And he very low-balled, low-keyed it. No big deal. We'll just do it again. My question is, and a guy named Bob Kavnar, who is the MSNBC expert who's been on constantly during this whole nightmare, he and I share the same serious reservations. Because if that tunnel has collapsed, you got to ask your question, why did it collapse? Is the geology down there so fragile that as they get close to the well bore of the Macondo well, the one that was leaking that they capped 2 weeks ago, is that whole geology fragile? Is it breaking down? Is there oil leaking at high pressure out sideways because it can't come through the top because of the cap? Again, all questions that we don't have answers to because BP has not released the mud log data to Ed Markey, who, of course, has been on our behalf asking very nicely, and the company has just stonewalled him and said, no, you can't have it.
I'm convinced they're not going to release it unless a congressional investigation.
Well, there has to be subpoena power, and there has to be legal sanctions, and people have to be threatened with jail. I mean, that's how you usually get information out of people that don't want to cooperate. You threaten them with jail. That's the same thing here. We have 11 people who died in this catastrophe. 11 people lost their lives, and think of those families when they see this corporation skating scot-free. Back to the technology. So Kavnar and I are in agreement that if they try the Staticill, which is to pump this drilling mud in the existing well under high pressure, forcing it down through the geology all the way to the bottom of the reservoir, they could blow out the well. I don't know whether you've been watching the live BP cam up
and. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I pop in and out.
Have you seen that oil cap has been leaking more and more and more?
Mm-hmm. But where's the oil going?
Well, if the oil is not coming out where we see it, except for some rivulets, which have been getting worse and worse, and the pressure was rising incredibly slowly compared to what they expected, it's got to be going out through the formation. It's got to be going out sideways somewhere between the top and the bottom of the well. Now, just today, we found that there is an identification of another oil gas field a few miles away called the Rigel gas field. And Admiral Allen claims now that that's what has caused these leaks around the Macondo well that the USGS and NOAA and EPA have been monitoring, that we're not there until the BP people capped this Macondo well, meaning that the pressure is forcing the oil and gas up through the formations and is coming up through the seafloor. Now, it turns out that Ed Markey's letter, which he sent on the 23rd of June, which was right after you and I had our first serious conversation about the methane, and we asked this audience to email Markey and to get the mud logs. Well, the day later, he sends his letter to BP, and it turns out that he was asking in this letter, which was a very long, complicated letter, was there a possibility that the gas from the Rigel field, which is incredibly high-pressure gas, was leaking into the Macondo well and coming up with the oil, and that's why we're seeing a 40%, 60% mix when normally methane in the oil is about 5% for normal oil wells. It's very complicated. It's very turgid. BP has not been transparent. And I am not happy that they're planning to go ahead with the Staticill because me and the MSNBC expert are in agreement. It could blow this well to kingdom come, and then you would have a rupture that would be really difficult to solve and to fix and to seal and to cap. And God help us if that happens.
And this is far from over then.
It's far, far from over. So stay tuned.
You got it. Thanks. Richard C. Hoagland, head of the EnterpriseMission.com. And our science advisor. Now, stick around because in a moment, we are going to be talking about miraculous moments with Alyssa El Chokachi and just incredible true stories affirming that life does go on. Fascinating. Then later on in the program tonight, of course, Friday and the Saturday morning, those special open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. We'll be right back. Well, Saturday we'll have a classic Ian Punnett show for you, and I'll be here Sunday night with Kevin Cook as we talk about Marian apparitions are real and an incredible story. And also, it's Sunday, the first Sunday of the month, so we will have emerging artists for you. And Tommy tells me some of the ones that he selected that you've sent in are absolutely superb. They've all been great. So just on Sundays, too, you can go to the coasttocoastam.com website and get their websites as well and support those folks. They're folks all around the world who are trying to break it into the music business. They don't really get a great opportunity, and we give it to them here. By the way, I'm sure you've been perplexed about the question, does life continue after death? We all ask ourselves that all the time. Up next, true messages of hope and healing from beyond. It's called Miraculous Moments, and we'll be back with Alyssa Elchukachi on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Alyssa Elchukachi has been working with the dying and the bereaved for almost two decades. They call it thanatology. Death, dying, and bereavement. Alyssa is the recipient of the Boston College Alumni Award for Excellence in Nursing and the Dr. William P. Stevens Award for the nurse who enjoys her work the most. She's the author of two children's books as well. She's a certified hospice nurse and a fellow, as I mentioned, in thanatology. And here she is on Coast to Coast Miraculous Moments. Alyssa, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good to have you with us. How did you, was it the nature of your work that got you into this field?
Into the field of...
thanatology?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. As a hospice nurse, you're working with the dying and the bereaved, and that's what thanatology is, the study of death, dying, and bereavement.
You put this work together called Miraculous Moments. What do you call a miraculous moment?
Well, I call a miraculous moment a moment of grace, which reassures us that life does continue on beyond physical death. This type of moment is one of heightened spiritual awareness, perhaps even a glimpse through the veil, and it reveals our true essence, our true nature, that we are not just human beings having a spiritual experience, but rather spiritual beings having a human experience.
Alyssa, as a hospice nurse, tell me some of the things that you witnessed, some of the things that you saw that helped convince you, even if you believe this all the time, maybe since you were a little girl, maybe that's the way you were brought up, like I was as a little Catholic boy. But what things did you see as a hospice nurse that convinced you, you know what, there's more to life than just dying and it's over?
Well, I think the first thing that I noticed, and I noticed it early on, was when I was going to see these patients in their last few weeks or days of life, you know, sometimes they would talk about, you know, they actually might even be having conversations with deceased loved ones. They may be actually talking, looking, whatever, or they might just mention that loved one was there. And almost always, the people that they were talking about, I mean, maybe 98% of the times, they had passed on before them. I remember one time I had this experience where this grandmother was dying, and she'd had a grandchild that died at 5 years old from a tragic gun accident where his older brother was playing with this gun. They'd gotten out of the gun cabinet, and you know, the older brother points the gun, pulls the trigger, and unfortunately the gun was loaded and the boy died. And, you know, that whole, you know, years and years of that family were distraught over the fact that this little boy had died needlessly and so forth. Well, when the grandmother was dying, she actually saw that little five-year-old standing at the foot of her bed, and he was smiling and he was waving. And that brought such hope to that mother who had grieved so desperately for all those years, and to all those family members, and of course even to the young man, you know, who had pulled the trigger.
How do we know the mind doesn't conjure this up at the moment of death?
I can't say that we don't know that the mind conjures it up. But the thing is that when people see these, you know, there are messages that are given that are particularly meaningful to that individual. And you know, we're not even just talking about the dying that are seeing the visions. We also have the bereaved that are seeing the visions.
Yeah.
You know, their loved one has died, and they have actually someone appear before them. There's one story in the book that's entitled A Promise Kept, and it was between this, again, grandmother and a granddaughter, and the granddaughter asks, you know, Grammy, will you please just let me know, you know, when you die, you know, when you cross, that she was ill, you know, just let me know if you can. And sure enough, in the same house where the grandmother had, you know, cared for many patients herself for many, many years, this girl was in that house, in the kitchen, and all of a sudden, Grammy appeared. Grammy appeared, and she's wide awake, seeing it, and as lucid as possibly could be.
Alyssa, if I make a pact with my three children that one day when I go to the hereafter, I'm going to come back and give them a sign that there's some existence of the hereafter, that you know, my soul continues.
Mm-hmm.
Do I, as that spirit, have that ability to do it, or do they have to believe it? I mean, when I finally pass on, leave this physical body, can I come back at will, do you think? I know this is all speculation here, but...
Of course it's speculation. And you know what? None of us are really going to know till we're on the other side. That's the truth of the matter. But what I want to say to you is I believe if you have made a contract, I mean, it is that important to you and to that loved one, you know, that they need to know, they absolutely need to know. I believe whether it's God, you know, that orchestrates this, or your angels, or that loved one that comes back, in some way, through God's grace, we are allowed, you know, to give some sort of sign that will give hope and, you know, healing to that bereaved individual.
A couple weeks ago, I was in a Los Angeles event, and I went to see James von Prague, the medium, and, you know, he was talking to a packed audience, and one person got up and said, you know, I'm an atheist. I want to believe, but I just don't have the proof or the evidence, and started talking, and James stopped the person and said, no. You know, you're an agnostic. Yeah, you know, if you're an atheist, you wouldn't even want to believe. You wouldn't even ever even think about believing. You're an agnostic. You're just looking for proof, and you will change if you find the proof. And the person said, well, all right, you're right. I am an agnostic. So my question is, do these folks, agnostics who, you know, are open-minded to believing, but there's no proof, so they don't believe, and then atheists who won't believe at all, do they experience this too?
I can't say about the atheists, because I haven't met an atheist yet who had an experience.
Ah.
Although I did have an interesting experience with an atheist, which, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how to quite interpret this. But this was a man who told me that, you know, he was going to die a conscious death, and not to talk to him about anything about spirituality, or he didn't know who had brainwashed me, but somebody obviously had, and I was not ever to mention that again. And actually, the reason I was in this house was because this man had told his wife he was going to die within 24 hours. And I went out to visit him in his home. And, you know, I went, checked him out. I mean, he was a hospice patient. He was failing in his health, but there was nothing to make me think that this man was going to die by his physical symptoms or the way that he presented. However, except by the fact that he said that he was going to die within 24 hours. So that's what I told his wife. I said, you know what, you can't dismiss this. And in fact, he had told his wife, we need to be calling all our family members because I am going to be dying. The interesting thing is, about 18 hours later, he did die. And I went out to pronounce him. And what I found was interesting is that, you know, for him, that was the end of everything. And do you know what? The watch on his arm stopped at the moment he died.
Sounds like the old grandfather's clock song. clock stopped, never to run again when the old man died.
Yeah, but for him, time ended. Everything ended. And that was what he believed. And it was very interesting because, you know, we had that you know, signal in this world for him. That's what he believed. Now, I don't know whether he does. He's in existence or not. I have to assume that he is, but he's in a place that he doesn't believe it.
Well, listen, do other medical folks, like doctors and other nurses, do they believe primarily that there is an existence?
I can only speak from the people that I have been exposed to in the hospice field. And I'm going to tell you that the vast majority, if not all, believe in life after. You can't not believe when you see things from either patients, you know, that people tell you about or that they've experienced firsthand. And, you know, I used to think this was, you know, just an occasional thing that happened. You know, maybe, you know, I might happen to meet somebody. But everywhere I go, and I say, you know, about my new book and what I'm doing, somebody tells me back in a story. An experience that either they had or someone else that they knew, that they know has had, you know. And there's lots of ways we have, you know, that we experience our loved ones who have passed on. You know, we might be given some sort of a sign, you know, synchronistic thing that happens that lets us know that's associated with that person, and it just appears unexplainably out of nowhere. You know,
or the old perfume or something like that.
That's exactly right. Maybe there was, you know, that favorite perfume that they wore. And then, you know, they've passed and, you know, you're sitting by yourself and all of a sudden here's that beautiful aroma. And, you know, that's your mom, your grandmom, whoever it was, you know, just right there with you. And many times they, you know, we have that presence with us when we are going through great challenges in our life. And I believe that's the beauty of all of this. You know, we're never alone. We're not going to have to go through those difficult things by ourselves because we have, you know, our loved ones in spirit that are there helping us, supporting us.
Alyssa, have you ever seen the what we've called the ectoplasm leaking out from a body?
I have not. I know some people have. I have not. I have had energetic experience, actually with the first patient I ever witnessed that died. I felt like her release. And what I want to say was so much joy I can't even describe. Filled up my heart that, you know. And the interesting thing is that this particular lady loved Pavarotti, and we were playing, you know, Pavarotti. You know, she had wanted Pavarotti to actually sing at her funeral, but that wasn't going to happen. So her son actually put this tape on. It was a cassette tape. This was way before we had the
CD. He was still
playing.
There then. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the very last note that Pavarotti sang on this tape, you know, the tape. You know, cassette recorder clicks off, and that was her last breath, and was like, you know, and that's what I felt like, this incredible exuberance, you know, that she had in that release. It was a fabulous send-off with Pavarotti.
Tell me a little bit about Stefan and the Unicorn.
Well, I want to tell you, I had the most incredible experience probably of my life when I was 23 years old. Let me first go back a little bit and say that when, you know, I was little, my parents were divorced. I was actually a baby. And my brother and I, you know, eventually went to live with our aunt and uncle and our six cousins in Knoxville, Tennessee. We lived there for 9 years, and our cousins became our brothers and sisters. Now, when I was 23 years old, my eldest cousin, his name was Stefan, was 29, and he was killed in a car accident. His pregnant wife and his two children were in that car. They all survived, but my cousin did not. As horrific as that was for our family.
Oh, of course.
The most amazing thing happened for me 2 weeks later because Stefan came to visit me. Now, I call it a dreamlike experience. It certainly was not a dream, but it was in that state that you have before you're fully awake. You're not fully awake, but you're not fully asleep. It's kind of in that in-between zone in the morning. And the reason I say it wasn't a dream was because there were certain things that were very, very different than any dream I've ever had before or since. The first thing is that the colors in this experience were brighter than anything in this reality. It's almost as if they were luminescent or shimmering. The closest thing I can come to describe would be if we had a freshly laden snow and it was a bright, sunny winter's day and the sun hits the snow and gives off this glare. It's so bright, it actually stings your eyes.
It glistens, exactly. It looks like little diamonds.
Mm-hmm. Except in my experience, it didn't sting my eyes. So that was one thing, the intensity of the colors. The second thing was the emotions that I felt. Everything was amplified. So if I was feeling sadness, it was despair. If I was feeling joy, it was ecstasy. And then the third thing about it is that I can still as clearly remember today as when this experience happened 33 years ago. And you know, you can't do that with your dreams.
No.
But I had this experience, and if you'd like, I'll share with you what happened.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I found myself in the woods. I was standing alone. There was a dirt road that ran from my right, kind of an overgrown dirt road, right in front of me and to my left, down into the woods. The leaves are brilliant, brilliant, shimmering green. And I looked to my right, and there, coming down this dirt road, is a unicorn, a brilliant, stark white luminescent unicorn that is running right at me, runs right past in front of me and off down to the left down that road. And my first thought was, oh my God, I didn't think unicorns were real. But I kind of shrugged my shoulders and I mean, how can I doubt it? It's right in front of me and there it goes. So I start chasing the unicorn. Now, the unicorn is galloping at a faster rate than I can possibly run, but I'm chasing it anyway. And it takes me to the edge of the field next to the house where we grew up. By the time I get to that edge of the field, the unicorn's on the opposite side of the field, over to the left, way beyond wherever I could catch it. And so I just kind of give up. That house that we grew up in is over to the far right. But standing directly in front of me, maybe 100 feet, is my cousin Stefan. And I cannot believe my eyes.
It's like it's showing you the way. We're going to come back in a moment, Alyssa. We'll take phone calls as we talk more about your story's miraculous moments on Coast to Coast AM.